All right, so if you got your stuff, go ahead and find a comfortable seat on your mat. We'll get started. Namaste. So welcome. All right. So quick announcement. We will be going till 5:45. So that's 15 minutes longer than the class is scheduled for because we do a little meditation at the end called Yoga Nidra. So all of that's to say if you have to be somewhere absolutely at, or you have to leave absolutely at 5:30, you can go ahead and just quietly let yourself out. But we'll be continuing on to Yoga Nidra, okay, right after the yin finishes at 4:30, or 5:30 rather. All right, today we're doing a flow for the hips. This will be pretty standard, straight ahead yin. Last week we did something very creative and different, which I think is good, but today we'll just be doing a straight ahead flow. So let's go ahead and bring the right leg out straight. The left foot comes to the inside of the thigh. We're gonna fold forward and down. We call that a half butterfly. Okay, half butterfly pose. Very standard fare for yin practice. And you just relax your upper body, let your back round, let your head hang, and you let gravity pull you forward and down. And if you don't feel like you're being pulled forward by gravity, sit up on a block or a bolster or a blanket. If you feel like you're being pulled forward too much, put a block or a bolster in front of you. You can rest your arms or your forehead or your chest on support. Okay? Now, if you're new to yin, we'll be holding this for 5 minutes, which is pretty standard for yin. Yin poses are held anywhere from a minute up to 5 minutes or even longer sometimes. And the reason we do this is because it affects the muscles a little bit differently. It affects the joints very differently, and it affects the energetic channels in our body differently than when we just hold something for like 30 seconds. So if you've ever taken flow class with me, I try and hold the stretches that we do in that class for at least 30 seconds because I've read some research that said anything less than 30 seconds isn't actually going to create a permanent change in the length of the muscles. They've done some studies and they've shown that stretching for less than 30 seconds isn't really effective. You're kind of wasting your time if you're doing that. Great way to warm up, but not a great way to actually lengthen the muscle tissue. So 30 seconds is the minimum, and that's what, if you're lucky in a flow class, you get 30 seconds. It actually feels like a really long time. But in yin, we do minutes and minutes at a time. And this creates a different effect on the tissues of our body, different type of load, different kind of stress. So yin is very good for the joints of our body. It's very good at releasing deep tensions in the fascia that help make up the muscles. Muscles also have connective tissue or fascia in them. And so if there's damage in the collagen fibers that help make up the belly of a muscle, that might affect that muscle's flexibility and also its proper functioning. So yin is a great practice that is different than flow yoga. And I say this only because after teaching yin for many years, I've had many occasions where someone will say something like, "Oh, you teach yin yoga, that's cool, I like flow." And it's like, yeah, it's a little bit like saying, "Oh, you work at an ice cream shop, I like steak." Like, okay, they're two completely different things, and both have their place. So yin yoga is yoga that does different things to your body than a flow practice does. It's not a replacement for a flow practice, but it's a very nice complement to one. So I always recommend that students do both. And whenever I teach at a studio, one of the things I try and do is get my yin classes and my flow classes back to back so students can do both. In this practice, it's very important that you feel things in certain parts of your body in each posture. And in this particular posture, I want you to feel a stretch of the back of your right thigh. I'd like you to feel that and simultaneously feel that your body is safe, that you aren't feeling pains or sensations in your body that make you think you might be actually damaging or hurting your body. That's very unlikely in this pose. This is a fairly innocuous pose. But in some of the other postures we'll do this afternoon, there may be times when you feel like, oh, I don't know if this is good for my knee. I don't know if this is good for my ankle. And in those instances, I want you to communicate with me and let me know. You might be able to work it out on your own, which is great. I encourage that. But if you find that ever there's a question about your safety, you're wondering, is this okay? Then just speak up. Let me know. We'll take a look at it. We'll have a quick discussion and see if we can get to the bottom of it together. And in yin class, I recommend you do that during the class, not after. In flow class, we'll take care of it after the class. We really don't have time. But in yin, we do. All right, let's switch sides. Same thing, other side. This is called half butterfly. It is a variation of the traditional yoga pose called Janu Shirshasana. Janu is knee, Shirsha is head. Means head to knee pose, although I don't recommend you actually try and get your head to your knee. Just relax and come forward and down. I'll be right back. So, if you feel the stretch in the back of the left thigh here, that and you feel safe, those two qualities are met by the posture, then we say it's an effective pose. If either of those things are not met, then we say it's ineffective, something is wrong. Either you're not actually stretching or stressing the tissues we want, or you're possibly creating an injury, and those are things we want to avoid. And this style of teaching is called the functional approach to yoga. This is in contrast to some other yoga classes you may have taken that are sort of more alignment-based, where people are more concerned with how the pose looks. I have almost no concern with how your pose looks. I'm most concerned with how it feels, and that's how I was taught yoga. It's much more important what it feels like. So having said that, there are certain things you can do in some of these postures, most of them really, that can change what you feel, the intensity of what you feel, or exactly where you feel the stretch. So let's just briefly look at the variations for this particular pose. They're fairly simple and probably fairly subtle. So sometimes I don't even mention them for this posture. The left foot could be flexed, or it could be pointed, or anywhere in between. Some students find by flexing their foot, maybe even holding their foot, they can generate a deeper, more intense stretch in the back of the left leg. And flexing the foot can sometimes draw the sensations down into the calf muscle, the muscle at the back of the bottom part of the leg. That's not our target, but if you have a lot of tension there, if you're a runner or something, that might be nice to stretch that area out as well while stretching the hamstrings. So there are lots of things you can do in addition to whatever it is that we're trying to do as the primary function of the pose. Primary function, stretch the hamstrings. Secondary, maybe you can stretch your calf muscle as well. Another thing that will change what you feel to a greater or a lesser degree is, are your toes pointing straight up, the left toes, are they pointing straight up to the ceiling? Are they off to the left or maybe even off to the right? That's called femoral rotation. So it's possible to rotate the femur to the left, to the right, and that may change how intense the stretch is in the back of your left thigh. Other than that, you can vary the spine. I usually encourage students to let your back round as you come forward and down, as this creates a stretch in the back of the spine. It is very therapeutic for the spine itself. But some students, by keeping the spine more straight, they actually can get a deeper hamstring stretch by pulling their straight spine down over the leg. Some students also find that by bending the left knee a little bit, they actually get a better hamstring stretch. And I know this seems counterintuitive. If you know anatomy, it seems counterintuitive, but experience bears it out that it's true and it's right. For whatever reason, some people, when they bend the knee and fold over it, not a lot, but a little bit, they actually feel more hamstring stretch. I believe that's because of the relationship of the pelvis with gravity. If you have a lot of tension in your hamstrings, bending and creating some slack so the pelvis can tilt forward allows a deeper stretch. It creates a deeper sensation of stretch in those muscles. So this is a good example of where theory might not bear out that experience, but experience always trumps theory, because theory tries to explain and predict the nature of reality, but it never can perfectly. It's always imperfect. It's an approximation at best. All right, let's go ahead and unwind onto our back. We'll do what's called a rebound. That's where you lay back on your back, close your eyes, still your body, and just feel the different sensations that are passing through awareness. Maybe sensations, there may be emotions even, thoughts, judgments. Many of us have issues around our body. We might have body image issues. We might be frustrated with our body because of injuries or a history we have with our own body. So it's not uncommon for us while doing yoga to experience judgments, thoughts about ourselves, about others, about our body, expectations we might have about what we think we should be able to do. Ideally, we'd like to create and hold space for all of this. We just allow it to arise, and we allow ourselves to notice it. And then if we pay attention, we'll find everything is coming and going constantly, including these thoughts, judgments, and sensations. Now let's bring our legs in. We'll give them a nice squeeze. And feel free to shake it off, so to speak. So you can rock side to side or forward and back. You can make circles with your knees. You can lift your head and neck up, whatever brings a nice sense of relief and release from those first two postures. You can be as still or as mobile as you like. And then let's bring our hands under the hips. We'll extend the legs up, lift the head and neck. Keep the head and neck lifted, and then as you exhale, gradually lower the legs to the ground. Hover them just above the ground for a moment, and then inhale, pop the legs up, and let's come all the way up to seated. All right, once you're up, come into a tabletop position with the hands under the shoulders and the knees under the hips. From there, turn to either the left or the right 90 degrees. It's totally up to you which way you go. 90 degrees is facing the side of your mat. So people usually kind of get a blank look when I say 90 degrees. They're like, what? So just turn sideways, 90 degrees. Stay in tabletop. Don't sit down. All right. Now take your right leg and kick it straight out to the right like a kickstand. Take your left knee away from the right ankle. Okay, as far as you can. So bring the legs as far apart as you can. Now if your left knee is complaining because it's on your mat or on your ground, put a blanket underneath that knee. You don't want to torture that knee, okay? You should feel stretch in the inside of your right thigh or maybe both thighs. Does everyone feel that? All right, once you've got that, you're good. You can stay on your hands, you can come to your forearms, you can lay on a bolster, totally up to you. All right, so I call this the half splits. It's not a pose that my teacher teaches a lot, but in my experience teaching, it's the most effective adductor stretch. So I actually use it quite a bit. The adductors are five muscles in the inside of your thigh. They are commonly referred to as your groin. A lot of people think their groin is up close to their pubic bone. That's true, but it extends all the way down the inside of the thigh to your knee. So if you feel a stretch anywhere in that inside of the thigh, that is all your groin, and that is all area that we are targeting. The right leg is straight, and that is targeting the long adductors, like adductor magnus, longus, and gracilis. These get a deeper stretch when the leg is straight. The bent knee, the left knee, is, if it's stretching, targeting the shorter adductors like pectineus and brevis. When the knee is bent like that, we don't tend to get as much of a stretch in the longer adductors. Just as in the last posture, you might find that you like to rotate your femur and change the sensation of the stretch in your right hip. The way to do that would be to rotate your foot. So you could have your toes pointing forward, but you could also have your toes pointing up toward the ceiling or away from you. I know it looks like you're moving your ankle, but that rotation actually comes from your hip. This is why visual cues can be deceiving. What looks like just moving your foot around, moving your ankle around, is actually moving your hip around. And so we have to decide, is what the foot doing, is it helping or hurting the stretch in the thighs? And again, that's up to you to decide. Does it feel like a better stretch or a worse stretch, more intense stretch? What are you looking for? The left leg, the foot could be pointed or flexed. The heel can be behind the knee or pulled in closer to the left buttocks. The hips can be directly over the ankle and the knee or pressed back toward that left ankle. The torso can come straight out from the hips or be angled to the left or to the right. The torso is surprisingly powerful at changing what you experience in your hips. And the reason for this is if you want to make a change in how you feel in a pose, the thing that changes how you feel the most is your pelvis. So because your spine is attached to your pelvis, if you were to move your spine to the left or to the right, you would affect the relationship of the pelvis with the legs, and this will likely change the stretch. Might make it more intense or less intense. Those are pretty much all the variations. This is a somewhat challenging posture because of its intensity. So I recommend just try and stay relaxed, remember to breathe, and see if you can just, again, allow the intensity. Try and relax into it. Take a moment to notice how resisting the intensity actually makes it worse. Many of us are so used to just pushing things that we don't like away, we don't recognize that it actually makes things worse. What teachers like Buddha tried to convey is that suffering is a choice. Pain is not a choice. Misfortune is not a choice. He basically said these things will happen. If you're alive, you're going to feel pain. If you're alive, you will have misfortune. That's inevitable. But what he discovered was suffering is a choice. Suffering is a psychological state that we unconsciously choose to be in when we fight or resist what is arising in our experience. When we let go of this resistance, he taught that we enter into something called nirvana. Ultimately, samsara, suffering, the world as we know it, and nirvana are exactly the same thing. This is explained in Christian language as the kingdom of heaven is all around us, but men do not see it. What you're looking for in spirituality is right in front of your nose. It just requires a mental or psychological shift. Let's switch sides. So take your time as you switch sides. Your connective tissue does not change shape very quickly. Be sure to use your props to make yourself as comfortable as you can be. It's not a comfortable posture. And the point is not to see how much discomfort you can stand. We're trying to lengthen the muscles in the hips and the legs in a systematic way. We're trying to find the best stretches for each of these muscle groups. The most effective, safest stretches that we can do. So again, in my experience as a teacher, this is a very effective stretch. If it does not work for you for some reason, let me know, and we'll see if we can find another stretch for you. But for most, it's just an intense pose. It's not that it doesn't work. It's not that it's dangerous. It just can have a lot of intensity to it. So again, my recommendation, anytime intensity rises as part of your yoga practice, be it yin or flow, the normal way of being is to try and resist. We can do this in many ways. We can psychologically or mentally resist it. We can physically try and get out of the situation we're in to reduce or eliminate the discomfort. We can create blame, mental dialogue, judgment as ways of trying to, well, we shouldn't be doing, oh, this is too much, this is dangerous, these kinds of ideas. What teachers like Buddha discovered was all of these things are a form of resistance, and that resistance is what strengthens the ego. So you may have heard, if you've done yoga long enough or been in spiritual circles enough, that yoga and spirituality is about the diminishing of the egoic structure. And that somehow when our ego disappears, we enter into some kind of bliss-filled state where we're at one with everything. And there's a lot of truth to this, but it may not be how you imagine it to be. It may not be literally merging into everything around you, but rather seeing the very same things that you experience every day in a different light, in a light that says yes to life. Almost all of us have certain circumstances and conditions to which we will say no. So after our initial spiritual awakening, which some of us may have had already and some of us may have not, after that initial awakening, it can be a lot of work to purify and to eliminate those forms of resistance to what is, to learn to say yes to every form and shape that life takes. Now, before you think that that's going to turn you into a human jellyfish, where you just sit around and say yes to everything, which means you don't do anything, that's not the case at all. Life has a plan. It moves through you. And when you say yes to life, when you say yes to the Tao, when you enter into the flow, you actually find your life takes on a quality and a beauty that you could have never imagined with the ego. The ego has a laundry list of demands, and it tells us over and over again, if these demands are met, then I will be happy. And yet, many of us have met those demands before, and yet we find it's not satisfied. It simply creates a new list. Okay, now that we have the mate and the house and the car, now I want babies. Okay, well, now that I have the babies, I want a second home in the country. Okay, on and on and on, never ending. It doesn't stop. And so if we pay attention, we'll find that the ego keeps promising us peace, fulfillment, happiness, joy, bliss, and yet it never, ever delivers. With spirit, we find that we're promised nothing, but we're given everything. In every moment, the simple moments, doing the dishes, walking on the street, driving the car, these can be as blissful as our most happy moments with the ego. Let's take a child pose. So you pull your knees in, just let your hips rock back to your heels. Your arms can either be in front of you or alongside your hips, whatever feels more comfortable. And again, we call that the rebound, where you just relax and feel the impact of that last posture. Right, with your next inhale, let's come up into a tabletop position, so hands under the shoulders, knees under the hips. Then we'll do a little what's called marauding bear, or bear pose. So you can begin to move your spine forward and back. You can twist it to the left, to the right. You can move side to side. You can combine those together. And you're just addressing your spine and the muscles in your torso and back, so you just give everything a little stretch. If you feel an area that's sort of has a kink in it, you can move it around, try and release that. We've done already 4 yin postures. It took us about 20 minutes, and so it might feel nice to do a little free form stretch at this point, addressing what we're feeling in the hips, the spine, the torso, the shoulders. Then let's go ahead and tuck our toes, lift the hips, come up and back into the downward facing dog. In downward dog, bending one knee and pressing the opposite heel to the ground and then switching sides, doing that a few times. We'll stretch out the joints in the feet and the legs, as well as the muscles in the legs. Then for our next stretch, we'll bring the right knee toward the right wrist, right foot to the left wrist, hips come down and back, and the torso relaxes forward and down over the right leg. In yin, we call this sleeping swan. It is a variation of Ekapada Raja Kapotasana, which is commonly called pigeon pose in American yoga. Okay, so coming forward and down, you should feel a stretch in the outside of your right hip. Does anyone not feel that? Right hip stretching. Okay, so we're focusing on the right hip, the outside of the right hip, the gluteals, and there are 10 muscles in this group for us, the 3 glutes, the tensor fasciae lata, and the six rotators that are deep down inside the hip. You don't need to know any of that stuff. You just need to know that you're feeling it in your right buttocks right now. The IT band, which is the iliotibial tract that runs along the side of the leg, is also included in that group. So make sure you might feel it there as well. I mentioned in the first posture that it was very unlikely that you would feel pain or discomfort associated with that pose. And I alluded to the fact that there are postures coming later in the sequence that might. This is one of them. So it's possible your right knee or ankle are giving you grief. If it feels safe, it's a little bit of discomfort, I'll leave that up to you. That's your call. But if you're questioning, I'm not sure if this is safe, again, please let me know. Let's look at the variations for this posture, which there are many. The right knee can come straight out from the hip in a basically neutral position. Okay? The femur is rotated because of the position of the tibia, which is the lower part of the leg. If you would like to increase the rotation, one way that you can do that is by bringing the tibia out to about a 90-degree angle. For some people, this will increase the rotation of the femur and increase the sensation of stretch, especially in the rotators deep inside the hip. For others, it just creates strain in the knee, so it's not recommended for everyone. I wouldn't say it's even recommended for most people. But if you have that kind of rotation, go for it. It's great. It feels awesome for the people that have it. For those that don't, it's just dangerous. The right knee can be brought out to the side. That's called abduction. Some people find by abducting the femur a little bit or maybe even a lot, they can increase the stretch and sometimes avoid an unhealthy compression in the front of the right hip. The acetabulum, which is the socket of the ball and socket joint of your hip, is very irregularly shaped on some people. It's maybe even jagged on some people. So bringing the neck of the femur and jamming it up against the lip of the acetabulum in a posture like this could create a lot of discomfort and pain and even be injurious over the long term if you continuously do that sort of movement or action. So we want, again, to be very mindful of what's happening. What do we feel in that hip and leg? Is it in the right area? Again, I want you to feel it at the outside in the buttocks, not at the front of the hip. Okay, you might feel a little something at the front of the hip, but it should not be strong, pinching, sharp, anything like that. The hips could be rocked to the left or to the right. They could also be squared to the ground. If you're trying to square them, feel free to use a block underneath one or both hips to help stabilize them. However, many students find by rocking over to one side or the other, they can increase the sensation of stretch in the hip. It feels more intense or more comfortable, whichever they're looking for. The torso, again, is a very powerful tool, and it's often overlooked. So while it's perfectly fine to have your spine in neutral, coming straight out from the hips, it is also fine to add a twist or to bring your torso off either to the left or to the right side, if that increases the quality of stretch that you like or makes you feel more safe or comfortable. So all of those are good reasons to modify a posture. I feel more safe, I feel more comfortable, or I feel more sensation in the target area. Right. So let's come through a downward facing dog. And then switch sides. Again, please let me know if you're having any sort of trouble. And this side will be the outside of the left hip that we want to feel. We want to be sure the left knee and ankle feel safe. Your arms, your head, your neck, shoulders can be positioned in any way that feels comfortable or helps you facilitate a deeper stretch. This practice affects us on many different levels. So we don't have to believe in spirituality to benefit from the practice. We can see it as a very physical practice if we choose. As we age, the muscles of our lower body tend to get tighter and tighter just over time. And the older we get, the more quickly this tends to happen. And we all know this intuitively on some level, right? Young people, children, very often are more flexible than adults are. And then younger adults are generally more flexible than people who we consider elderly. So, this being the case, one way we can try and avoid what's called the natural aging process, which isn't necessarily natural, but the trend we see in our culture, is to do practices that induce mobility and flexibility in the lower body and create strength in the upper body. Because as we age, we lose mobility in the lower body and we lose strength in the upper body. You might not think strength in your upper body is important, but it actually is, especially for women. And the reason for this is it's generally women that get osteopenia and osteoporosis, which is a loss of density in the bones. It's not coincidental that women are less likely to do stuff with their upper body, to strengthen the upper body. It's very easy to get away from that, the idea of, oh, well, do some girl push-ups, make it easy, you're a girl, you don't have to lift anything heavy. The difference in strength between men and women is not that great compared to other species and animals. There's a much bigger difference between strength in men and or males and females in other species. In our species, it's pretty small, sometimes negligible. But women actually stand to benefit more from having strength in the upper body than men. Men very naturally, very often have more strength. So it might take more for a woman to develop it in her upper body. But she's the one who's more likely to have osteoporosis or osteopenia as she ages. Now, building strength at any point in our life is not necessarily easy. But I will tell you, it gets only harder as we get older. So if you are not very strong today, if you can't do one push-up or three push-ups in a row, if that's extremely hard for you, then now is the time to get started because you're not getting any younger. And generally, as we age, it's only going to get more and more difficult to build this strength. One of the things that doctors prescribe for fighting the loss of bone density or osteoporosis is vigorous weight-bearing upper body exercises. So again, if we'd like to fight the aging process, we want to strengthen the upper body and stretch the lower body. This is a generalization, but it's a good way to just sort of approach your yoga classes. We don't strengthen the upper body in yin. So that's what I do in the universal class after this one. We do quite a bit of upper body targeting to strengthen those muscles in the shoulders, upper back, chest, abdomen, obliques. All right, let's go ahead and release from that and come onto our belly. And we'll rebound there for a moment. So in Yin, we call that crocodile pose, where you just lay on your belly. You can have your right hand on top of your left hand. Let your forehead rest on the back of the hands. All right, from there, let's press back to a kneeling position. And once kneeling, take your left leg out in front of you. Keep your right foot folded. This is called a half saddle. Let's take a look at this posture in a little bit of detail. Okay? This is a great preparation for full saddle. So half saddle is done with the toes either straight behind the ankle or with the foot flexed and the toes out to the side. Some people can only do this. Some people have a choice, okay? Let what you feel in your knee and your ankle and your thigh guide you. The next thing to consider is, do you feel any sort of pain or discomfort in your knee? If you do, you can possibly reduce this by changing the angle of the knee or by sitting up on something, so like a block or a blanket. This will reduce flexion at the knee joint and hopefully get rid of that discomfort or pain. Sometimes it's just a millimeter or a centimeter, a slight adjustment can make the difference between feeling like your knee is being tweaked versus feeling fine. So again, don't be afraid to try and find that spot. Now, what we'd like to do is stretch the front of the thigh. These are the quadriceps and the hip flexors up here, but we're going to focus mostly on the quads. So if I'm sitting here and I already feel the stretch, I don't need to do anything else. If, however, I don't, I begin to lower back to my hands, forearms, onto a bolster, crown of the head, or all the way back onto your back. At a certain point, you may begin to feel it in your back, and that's perfectly fine. It is a back bend. Two very common questions that I get when people do this posture. One is it okay if my knee comes up off the ground like Rachel's knee is right now? Absolutely. Totally fine. Okay? It's not a problem. As long as it feels, again, comfortable for your knee, for your body, then very often it is more dangerous to try and push the knee to the ground. You can actually feel there's more strain being created. The other question is it okay if my hip rolls up off the ground? Absolutely. Okay? So for many people, that's the only way for them to do this posture safely or comfortably, is to roll away from the right hip a little and create a little less flexion at the knee joint. Very similar to sitting on something. So if you are someone who's rolling away, you can also try sitting up on a block or vice versa. So as you lower back, you begin to pull on the hip flexors at a certain point, and eventually it goes into your back. It's asymmetrical, so it may not feel super intense in your back, but you might feel it a little bit. And I mention that because students will sometimes ask, is it okay if I feel it in my back? Yeah, absolutely. It's a back bend for us as well. What if you're all the way back in your back and you don't feel anything? That happens too. The first thing to try is to bend your left knee and place your left foot on the ground, knee pointing up. It might not make sense at first why that would have an effect, a desirable effect. But both legs are meshed in a very thick layer of fascia or connective tissue. So what we do with one leg affects the other leg, assuredly. Okay? The next thing you can try is dropping the left knee out to the left. So from that same position, you just drop it out to the side. Finally, if you still don't feel it, you can reach down and grab your left leg and pull it in towards you, moving it around at different angles. And you will likely find that this will give you a very powerful quad stretch if you can find the right position for the leg. Again, if you're confused by any of this, just let me know. Okay? Got about halfway, about the halfway point. Got about 2 minutes, 30 seconds left. You okay? You okay? Do you need any help? You good? It's not uncommon for a posture to change after a couple minutes. So if you're someone who's a little higher up, if you just take a moment and self-reflect, you might find, oh, I actually feel like I can go further at this point. That's because your muscles and fascia are changing the entire time that you're in these poses. So it's not uncommon for a sort of surface level of tension or tonus, a sort of nervousness in the muscle tissues to dissipate after about a minute or two. The muscles recognize that they aren't going to be overstretched or overstressed, and they begin to relax, and then you find, oh, I can actually go much further. Sometimes the opposite happens. After a couple minutes, you feel like you're cooked. You feel like you need to come out of it, and that's okay too. But as much as we can, we want to stay the course with the poses. And this is because every minute that we spend in the posture, there's certain different physiological things happening in our body. And so yin is really about the time that we spend in the postures. That's why as much as we can, we want to hold the entire time. It may not always be possible, but that's what we're shooting for. Got about 40 seconds. So let's roll away from the folded leg, free it. And it's usually easier if you sit up to get onto the other side. So if you're on your back, try and make your way up. And then we'll fold the left foot back and do the same thing on the other side. You may notice that one side is different from the other. That is normal. That's much more normal than the other way around. Okay, so I think a lot of us think we're the only one who has one leg that will do something that the other leg won't. No, most people have that. If not in their hip joint, maybe in their knee, their ankle, or somewhere else in their body. Okay, so again, the human mind is a very interesting thing because it's able to entertain ideas about reality that have nothing to do with reality. We might think, I'm supposed to be perfectly symmetrical. Whatever I do on one side, I should be able to do on the other side. Who told you that? Who said that? We pick up these ideas, they seem to float in the air, and we tell ourselves stories like that. I should be able to. Why can't I? We get frustrated, we get upset with ourselves or others. We tell ourselves stories about other people. They should. Why don't they? And yet, if we really look at reality, we see that things are very far from what our mind is telling us the way they should be. And again, suffering is arguing with what is. Enlightenment, nirvana, samadhi, is no longer arguing with what is, with life as it is. Again, this doesn't mean we become a couch potato or jellyfish who has no will and just sort of flops around. Quite the opposite, in my experience. We might become even more vital, more active. But it's, again, done with a different psychological perspective. If you'd like to learn more about this, if you get the opportunity, read the classic yoga scripture called the Bhagavad Gita. The Bhagavad Gita is about a young warrior who has to fight a battle against some of his own family. And he feels that this is wrong. He doesn't feel right about killing his own archery teacher, his own professor who taught him the martial arts. And yet he's going to face him in battle and possibly have to kill him. He doesn't feel like this is right. He's very distraught over this. And the avatar, the teacher in this story, the enlightened being, is Krishna. And Krishna tells his pupil, Arjuna, to fight. This is a just war. And as the avatar, Krishna tells Arjuna, I've already killed these people. You're just my instrument. You're just carrying out what I've already done. And when we learn to let go of the egoic perspective, we find that this is how we begin to act in the world. We're active. We do things. We're not arguing with what arises, but we're taking part. We're a player. We're out there. We're doing things, taking part, celebrating the failures and the successes. Because as far as spirit is concerned, they're equally valuable. If you went to a film, and the film was just about a guy who wins, and wins, and wins, and wins, and wins, and wins, and it ends with him winning again, it'd be the most boring film you've ever watched in your life. There's no drama, there's no tension, there's no interest. So on some level, we instinctively know this. What makes life interesting is the tension, is the drama, is the ups and downs. That's what it's all about. So when we can embrace this on a very deep level, and again, when we're winning, celebrate that. When we're losing, celebrate that. Then a real joy can come into our lives. It's all temporary, both winning and losing. It's going to come and it's going to go. So embrace that reality and get rid of the fear. Get rid of the suffering. All right, let's unwind. We'll rebound for a few moments on our back. Just relax, take it easy. Let's bring the legs in, give them a nice squeeze, shake off that last set, two postures. And again, this is the leg cradle, and you can pretty much move however you instinctively feel will bring you a sense of balance. Then let's bring hands under the hips, extend the legs up, we'll lift the head and neck, look at the toes, gradually lower the legs to the ground, hover just above the ground, inhale, pop the legs up, let's come all the way up to seated. All right, let's set up for Yoga Nidra now, which is our meditation practice. So we'll turn around, feet facing that wall, bolster under the knees, laying back on your back. If you feel you need something underneath your head, you may roll a blanket and place it underneath your neck, but please don't place anything under your head. Have your head flat so that your head and your heart are on the same plane. Ideally, nothing touches the soles of the feet or the palms of your hands. So you'd like your arms either maybe by your sides or overhead. Palms up. The head should be centered, the chin tucked in slightly, and the eyes closed. Yoga Nidra means sleep meditation. Unlike other forms of meditation, which can be excruciating, especially for the beginner, Yoga Nidra is very easy, and most people find it extremely enjoyable, even if they're brand new to yoga and brand new to meditation. This is because of two things. One, it's done laying down. And we all know how to lay down. It's very easy, just like going to sleep at night. Two, it's guided. And so one thing that really hangs up a new meditator is, what am I supposed to be doing with my mind or my thoughts? And a feeling of inadequacy. If we're told to visualize something, we might find that we very quickly are not able to visualize it for very long. Again, we might experience frustration. So this form of meditation, I find, is very, very beginner-friendly. Begin by scanning your body and making sure you're completely comfortable. Once you've made yourself completely comfortable, set the intention mentally to allow your body to remain still. This is one key component of the practice, that you want your body to be still. The practice will last about 10 minutes. The other key component is, you'd like to remain present or aware. You'd like to stay connected with the sound of my voice. You'd like to avoid actually falling asleep. So if this is difficult for you, one thing I can recommend is to bend the elbows, one or both. Have your hand in the air. And then as you begin to fall asleep, your arm will relax and it will help bring you back into the room, wake you up. Otherwise, just sit back, relax, and enjoy. To begin, let's take a deep breath in, and as you exhale, you can let out a gentle sigh. Begin to feel your body, your mind, letting go, releasing tensions physically, and letting go of thoughts mentally. Then again, let's take another deep breath. And as you exhale, feel yourself letting go even more. And then one more time, take a deep breath in and exhale as you let go completely. Now turn awareness to your breath. Specifically, begin to feel the movement of your belly or abdomen as you breathe. Begin to exaggerate this movement as you deepen your breath. Breathe deeply and fully, but without any sense of strain. Continue to breathe deeply, but now add a very simple visualization to the breath. As you inhale, feel or imagine the breath moving from the third eye between the eyebrows, down to the tailbone. And as you exhale, see or feel the breath move from the tailbone, up the spine, back to the point between the eyebrows. With each breath, see it move. Now we'll add the non-vocal sound, so hum. As you inhale, silently say to yourself, so, S-O, as the breath moves from the third eye to the tailbone. As you exhale, mentally say to yourself, hum, H-U-M, as the breath moves from the tailbone back to the third eye. This breath coordinates the energy, mind, and breathing, synchronizing them effortlessly. Now relax your effort and return to breathing naturally. I'd now like to invite you to create or work with an intention. If you don't yet have an intention, it should be stated in the first person, present tense, and use only positive words. The statement should be very brief and short, simple. If you can't think of an intention, then simply relax during this time and see if one does not arise spontaneously. If you have an intention, then repeat it to yourself silently 3 times now. Now take awareness to your body. Turn awareness to the point between the eyebrows, down to the pit of the throat. To the right shoulder. Elbow. Right wrist, thumb, index finger, middle finger, ring finger, little finger, wrist, elbow, shoulder, pit of the throat, left shoulder, elbow, wrist, thumb, index finger, middle finger, ring finger, little finger, wrist, elbow, shoulder, pit of the throat, center of the chest, right side of the chest, center of the chest, left side, center of the chest, navel, center of the pubic bone, right hip, right knee, ankle, big toe, second toe, middle toe, fourth toe, little toe, ankle, knee, hip, center of the pubic bone, left hip, left knee, ankle, big toe, second toe, middle toe, fourth toe, little toe, ankle, knee, hip, center of the pubic bone, navel, center of the chest, pit of the throat, point between the eyebrows. Now relax completely as you dissolve and merge with awareness at the third eye. Notice that everything is held in awareness. Every thought, emotion, sensation, the breath, even the entire experience of being embodied is actually inside of awareness. Awareness is not inside the body. The body is inside of awareness. You are awareness. Now return attention to the breath. If you're working with an intention or sankalpa, repeat it again to yourself now 3 times silently, using the exact phrase and words that you did at the beginning. Then begin to deepen your breathing. Feel movement, energy, and awareness very naturally return. And when you feel ready, make your way up to seated. So let's face sitting or sit facing this direction. To finish, we'll join our hands at the heart-centered Anjali Mudra. Let's take the hands from the heart to the head and bow our heads to the heart. Namaste. So thank you for coming. A couple quick announcements. I'll be teaching at the Dirty South Yoga Fest, which is this Saturday. So it should be a lot of fun. It's a benefit for a group called Centering Youth that brings yoga to underserviced communities. So it's a good cause. And then also I've got openings for my November retreat. We're about half full. And we'll do things like a 45-minute or several 45-minute yoga nidras. We'll do kirtan, which is chanting with music. We'll also, of course, do a lot of asana, both yin and flow style. So if that sounds good to you, you can get more information on my website. I've got cards right here. If you can, stick around for Efficient or for Universal, which is next. Otherwise, hope to see you on Thursday. Thanks.